Every tragedy brings us face to face with the stages of grief. Traditionally, those five stages, as defined by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, start with denial. But some observers have noticed the grief related to the recent school shooting in Parkland, Florida, has manifested itself more with anger. How often does anger start the grief process, and is that okay, or could it lead to deeper problems? With me to talk about that is Joanne Cacciatore, an assistant professor in the School of Social Work at ASU. Joanne, what role should anger play in grieving?
I try to tell people with whom I work who are grieving, anger is just an emotion. What we do with that anger matters. So anger is something that can certainly be internalized and channeled into a powerful force for good. But then there are some people who are more comfortable using the sort of that energy of anger to do things. But then there are people who aren't comfortable with anger as an emotion. There are various reasons for that. Their childhood may not, perhaps they had a parent who was angry often. And so this is why it's very important when we're looking at people who are grieving, not to sort of look at them as a collective whole, and rather to say individuals will express grief in different ways. Now, with regards to the teenagers who are really fueling this movement, I think for a lot of them, it's a way for them to move the energy of the trauma. So trauma itself is a very somatic experience. You can feel it in your body. You can feel it in your heart rate. You can feel it in your respiration. In a way, these students are able to take that energy that they have around that. And it seems like, I mean, I haven't talked to them, but it seems like they're using that to make changes. And I mean, the most important thing is that people take care of themselves and then do something with the energy if they feel so moved. But we have to be taking care of ourselves too.
When anger is the response, whether it's the energy of the teens you talked about or maybe the anger of the universe when it comes to a parent who's lost a child, does that affect the grieving process and how someone in that situation would go about it? Even if it makes sense to have that reaction, can that have a lingering negative effect itself?
In my experience, it's not as much about the emotion having deleterious effects as it is sort of our resistance to the emotion. So if we let the anger just sort of, you know, show up and do what it does, and, you know, let's say that our way of coping with anger is that we go for a run or we rant or we get politically active and we do something with it and we let it move, then I find clinically and in the research that emotions aren't necessarily harmful or beneficial. They just are. It's when we sort of get caught up in grasping emotions or, you know, clinging to them, hanging on to them, or pushing them away, averting them. And I think that's where we get in trouble. It's natural, of course, to feel anger. Not everyone does, but many people do. And that's a natural thing. My sense is that for many of us, we've been taught anger's a bad thing. I don't think anger's a bad thing. I think what we do with anger can be bad. If we're angry and we punch someone, that's not a great thing to do. But if we're angry and we can channel that in a healthy way and express it in a healthy way, I think it's absolutely fine for most people to feel and experience their anger. The only choice would be to push it away, and to push it away comes with its own set of consequences.
After something like this, after something traumatic like this, is any emotion okay as long as it's the honest emotion and as you say, as long as you don't just go around punching people? Is it always better in this case to let the real emotion come out?
Honesty and transparency in the family system and good, honest communication, open, honest communication, allowing them to ask questions, allowing them to even hard questions, and answering those hard questions, keeping it simple and short, direct, but honest, I think is very, very important for families. And this is why it's so important for the community to step in the gap, because this can be an overwhelming time for families. And if the community can step in the gap, then parents are better able to have those really hard conversations and provide the main source of support for the children if they're supported as a unit.
I mean, I know on the surface the grieving process ends. There's a process, there's a system, whatever. Does the grieving process ever really end, though, if you lose a child in this way? And I guess, how do you overcome it? Is it just about time, or is it about certain methods that make sense?
Another really good question. So my research suggests that there is no end to grief when a child dies. It doesn't matter how the child dies. It's not as raw. It's not as debilitating. But it's not something that ends. I've worked with people whose children died 40 and 50 years ago, and they spent 40 or 50 years drinking, moving, gambling, drugging, changing relationships in an effort to run from the reality of the loss. And you just can't, not that kind of a loss. And so the key becomes, how do I integrate this grief into my identity as a person, as a mother or a father? And then how do we integrate this as a family? And so that this is why community support is absolutely essential. That's why organizations like the Miss Foundation and the Compassionate Friends and Parents of Murdered Children exist, to provide support to family systems through this so that they aren't alone. But it's not the kind of thing that you get over. But the clinical symptoms show up an average of more than four years later. And in my work, one-on-one counseling with families, I really do see it decades later. People experience this grief decades later. And that's not a bad thing. You know, grief is a way that we can stay connected to and remember people we love who died, especially our children. So even if it comes with sadness, I think most of these families will say, for the rest of my life, I want to remember my child who died, because I will always be her mother or his father. And that's a role that I never want to give up.
Joanne Cacciatore is an assistant professor in the School of Social Work at ASU.